So natural law is both outside of us and inside of us.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
God has written on the hearts of man his rules for right behavior. Man, in turn, can recognize these rules as he observes moral purposes in the design of the world around him. It is terribly crude to discuss it, but regarding homosexual activity, suffice it to say that nature itself teacheth the man that one of these things does not belong here.
You can listen to Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law on an audio DVD from both Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible gift of $300. Two conferences on one DVD. Learn more at issuesetc.org and click on the conference audio DVD logo.
I just consider myself a disciple of Jesus, not an environmentalist. Our Bible says out from the very beginning that God created. Psalm 24 says the earth belongs to the Lord. And so we're just supposed to be caretakers of this earth. And so my role as being a Christian is to preserve God's creation. We're very concerned with what pollution does to children, both born and unborn. And that's our biggest message, is to help them to see the health impacts that we cause by damaging God's creation. We've gotten too hung up in some of the old language about what does dominion mean, and it thinks it gives us the right to pillage instead of being the right to be a steward.
That is Pastor Mitch Hescox, president of the Evangelical Environmental Network, talking about his concerns, or he says concerns that all Christians ought to have about the environment. What should we know about the Evangelical Environmental Network? They claim to be pro-life and not so much an environmental group as just simply a evangelical group that is concerned about the stewardship of the earth. Greetings, welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on live this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 5th of December. Dr. Cal Beisner will join us for the first few minutes to talk about the Evangelical Environmental Network. A little bit later, Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch will be our guest. We're going to talk about a recent story in the Washington Post about the Islamic State's caliphate. The headline reads, "The Islamic State's caliphate has been toppled in Iraq and Syria. Why isn't anyone celebrating?" We'll see what Robert Spencer has to say about both the caliphate of ISIS in Syria and Iraq, and the headline in the Washington Post. Sharif Girgis joins us after that. He is author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled "The Christian Baker's Unanswered Legal Argument, Why the Strongest Objections Fail," and co-author of an opinion piece in the New York Times titled "A Baker's First Amendment Rights." We're going to talk about the Supreme Court case, Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission, that was heard earlier today by the U.S. Supreme Court. Then we'll round everything off today on this Tuesday, talking with Dr. Carl Fikancher. Looking forward to Sunday morning, the second Sunday of Advent, headed toward the gospel reading in Mark chapter 1, where John the Baptist prepares the way. You can join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MY-IE. Our in-studio email address, talkback at issuesztc.org. Our Twitter address, at issuesztc, and the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the Evangelical Environmental Network, Dr. Cal Beisner, a regular guest, founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, and author of the book "Where Garden Meets Wilderness: Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate." Cal, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, thanks very much, Todd. Great to be back with you.
What's the most important thing that our listeners need to know about the Evangelical Environmental Network?
Wow. You know, there are several different things that I might think of fairly quickly. One is that the Evangelical Environmental Network really purports to speak for a lot of evangelicals, and in a sense, I suppose it does, and yet it tries to speak for them on some fairly technical issues on which, frankly, it doesn't have much expertise. And a second thing might be that the Evangelical Environmental Network has been very much linking arms with the sort of left-leaning environmental activist organizations, some of them private groups like Sierra Club and the like, but also especially under the Obama administration, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. But really, Todd, I think I hope this won't sound self-serving, but I think the most important thing that people can know about the EEN is that there is an alternative. There's an alternative that that consists of nearly 70 scholars, all of them evangelicals, all of them committed to the authority of Scripture, but they're roughly a third of them are natural scientists, including climate scientists and environmental scientists, and roughly another third are economists and policy experts specializing either in environmental economics or developmental economics. And then the other third, roughly, are theologians, philosophers, ethicists, and pastors. And that organization is the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, which is the one that, as you mentioned, I'm the founder and national spokesman. And the reason I put this way is that the Evangelical Environmental Network has, over the years, issued a number of different declarations as if they were really representative of evangelical scholarship. And in fact, they're not. And the Cornwall Alliance, instead, when we issue major research papers or articles or, in a few instances, some declarations, they are authored by teams of well-balanced scholars from the sciences, from economics, from policy, from theology and ethics, and they are reviewed by additional excellent scholars. And so I think people can see our work as very high quality and giving evangelicals some guidance on some really pretty tough issues to adjudicate.
You said earlier that the Evangelical Environmental Network may represent a certain segment of evangelicals on the environment. What kind of myths about the environment have been perpetuated in the name of evangelical theology among Christians in America?
I'm not so much so sure that it's so much in the name of theology as it is in the name of fairly sloppy science. And I think what I see the EEN doing most often is promoting belief in dangerous man-made global warming, or what often just goes under the name climate change, though that's kind of a way of euphemizing it a bit. Also, the EEN has promoted the ideas that using coal for generating electricity puts dangerous amounts of mercury into the air and the water, and therefore puts American infants in the womb at high risk of serious neurological disease. And as a matter of fact, the scientific evidence just doesn't bear either one of those out. And unfortunately, they have taken up the notion that carbon dioxide, which is an odorless, colorless, non-toxic gas that is absolutely essential for life. Plants have to have it for photosynthesis, and everything else depends on plants, right? They've taken up the notion that carbon dioxide is a pollutant, whereas in fact, instead, it's a very good thing, and the more of it that's in the air, the better plants grow, and therefore the more food there is for everybody. And so I think what the Evangelical Environmental Network has done is to take up a position that actually impedes the economic development of the poor around the world, which is exactly the opposite of what I think we as Christians ought to want to do. We want to see people rise out of poverty and the high rates of disease and premature death that inevitably accompany it.
So we're talking here about both an effort in prudence and a bit of a balancing act. We don't want to see, say, the environment polluted with all kinds of toxins as Christians. That would be irresponsible and in maybe in some cases bordering on sinful for us to do. And yet we don't want to see a bad science running the show or restrictions put in place that actually make people's lives globally worse than they are even now.
Yeah, that's true. And I think just to go back to the coal example, that's a perfect illustration of that careful distinction that you've just drawn. We don't want to see pollution going unchecked. We want to keep pollution at as minimal a level as we can, such that the cost of reducing it anymore would exceed the benefit of reducing it anymore. There really is a point at which we can say, clean enough. If you don't believe that, then just ask yourself why you don't spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, cleaning your house, disinfecting everything. You could, in fact, make it less infectious, but you realize that the benefits of doing that would not exceed the costs. Well, similarly with pollution out in the world. What we see regarding, for example, coal, is that in industrialized countries, we have adopted technologies whereby we can burn coal to make electricity, and the only thing that comes out of the cooling towers is a combination of water vapor and carbon dioxide. Neither one of those is toxic. Both of those are essential to life, and it's really good to have them in the air. We're able to capture and sequester all of the actual pollutants that come when you burn coal, fly ash, and toxic metals and some toxic gases. We can filter all of those out. And in developing countries, as they get wealthier, they can better and better afford the same technologies. But when, for instance, Mitch Hescox of Evangelical Environmental Network speaks of carbon dioxide coming from our burning coal as if that were a pollutant, well, that I think is really to confuse the issue, because it's not a pollutant. It's very good for life. And the more of it we have, the more the plants grow and the more everybody has to eat.
So what are the, I think we've talked about this before, kind of the cost benefit. There are things that are being proposed, and I think it came up in conversations surrounding President Trump's failure to sign on to certain global environmental accords. The kind of money that's being proposed for the benefit is pretty staggering. Talk about that, if you would, Cal.
Yeah, it's real straightforward and pretty simple. If you accept all of the assumptions behind the Paris Climate Agreement in terms of how much warming you get from CO2, and I think, as a matter of fact, that they've exaggerated it significantly, but we'll be generous to them, right? Let's accept all their assumptions, and let's also accept all of their calculations of what it will cost for each of the different countries around the world to fulfill its intentions under the Paris Agreement. Here are the figures. Full implementation of the Paris Agreement every year from 2030 to the end of the century, for 70 years, in other words, would cost between $1 and $2 trillion per year, $70 to $140 trillion total. And it would reduce global average temperature in the year 2100 by 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit. That's way too little to make any difference to any ecosystem, and certainly way too little to make any difference to human well-being. But instead, you know, we're being asked to pay $23.3 to $46.6 trillion per 0.1 degree Fahrenheit of temperature reduction. And instead, we could instead spend that money to provide purified drinking water, sewage sanitation, infectious disease control, nutrition supplements, electricity to homes and factories in order to produce more wealth, to lift people out of poverty, to have safer transportation, safer housing, and everything else. All of those uses of that $70 to $140 trillion would have enormous benefits to human health and longevity, whereas the very, very slight temperature reduction would have no benefit whatsoever. So it's really a waste, and frankly, it's not a surprise to me that the author of the book, The Art of the Deal, would recognize that the Paris Agreement was just simply not a good deal. We've written about this at Cornwall Alliance in a number of different articles, and we've done some major papers explaining why fighting global warming is just simply not good stewardship. It's not good for the poor around the world, and it's not good for anybody else around the world. So cornwallalliance.org is where your listeners can read some of those papers. And if they'll subscribe to our free email newsletter, we'll keep them up to date on these things as new developments occur.
I want you to respond to a few of the things that Evangelical Environmental Network claims about fossil fuel use. They claim that it's linked to premature births caused by pollutants, and you're going to need to explain that term, from burning coal. More children with asthma and concerns about the fracking industry. He says it's economically, morally wrong to continue to promote the fossil fuel industry. How do you respond to that?
Yeah. Well, first, EEN has furthered a claim that burning coal adds mercury to our air and therefore also to our waters as it precipitates out. And this exposes American infants in the womb to high levels of mercury poisoning that result in, as they've described it, devastating permanent brain damage. Now, the actual scientific evidence there from the EPA instead is this, that the neurological development is slowed down slightly, very, very slightly, to about age two, and most infants grow out of it beyond that time. The equivalent is less than that of the difference between identical twins raised in the same household. That is, there's less than half a point IQ difference made. And that is in a population of infants that is entirely hypothetical. These would be the infants of professional fisherwomen who eat over 300 pounds of fish that they themselves catch in the country's most mercury-polluted waters. But the EPA admits that it can't find any such women. So what it did was it hypothesized a population that, if it existed, would be at risk, but it doesn't exist. Also, the claim is that the burning of coal associates with higher rates of asthma. Well, as a matter of fact, asthma rates have climbed at the very same time that particulate matter pollution in the United States has declined. And so the notion that particulate matter pollution, whether from coal plants or anything else, is driving asthma rates is actually exactly backwards. We ought to see the opposite happening. And so it's actually more likely, a lot of doctors are theorizing, that part of what's causing so much asthma is actually that our air is too clean. Our homes have these wonderful air filters on our HVAC systems, and we have windows that are closed most of the time. And so our children's lungs and bronchia are not subjected to the kind of challenges that allow them to grow more robust, and so they're more fragile. That too is simply mistaken. The EPA, the federal EPA, which would love to regulate fracking, has done numerous studies on fracking, and every single time it has concluded that there is no risk to groundwater or anything else from fracking that differs from any other method of drilling for oil or natural gas. And fracking has instead greatly improved our productivity in oil and natural gas, which has caused the prices of oil and natural gas to decline, which caused the prices of all other things to decline, since after all, we use energy to produce and transport everything. And that's good because as these things become less expensive, people have more income left over that they can spend on education, on safer transportation, on safer and better food, on better refrigeration to keep their food from spoiling, on medical care and everything else. So actually, we should be thankful for fracking. And I see fossil fuels as a wonderful gift from the Lord. We can use them intelligently. We need to be careful how we mine them. We need to be careful how we burn them. But we know how to do that, and we can do it in a clean way that is of enormous benefit to human beings.
Finally, then, Mitch Hascock of the Evangelical Environmental Network says that many Christians interpret the idea of dominion over creation as a license, in his words, to pillage. Are Orthodox, creedal, Bible-believing Christians anti-environment?
You know, I hear that all the time, and I simply have not found any significant Bible commentator, any significant theologian, any significant pastor who has ever made that kind of an argument. It's a pure straw man. It's a caricature. And really, it has its roots in an essay by Lynn White Jr., a medieval historian, in the 1967 issue of Science magazine called The Historical Roots of Our Ecological Crisis. And White theorized that Genesis 1:28, which tells us that when God had created Adam and Eve, he blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and everything that moves on the face of the earth, quite theorized that this verse had become an excuse for people in the Judeo-Christian tradition to abuse and pillage the earth. The problem is, you can go back through the entire history of rabbinic and Christian commentary on that verse and never find anybody interpreting it that way. This is a complete straw man, and it's just one way for people in the environmental movement to try to get Christians to start off with self-doubt, to start off with self-condemnation, and get them to embrace what is, in fact, an unbiblical attitude toward the earth, namely that we should be serving the earth rather than serving God and our fellow men, and that the earth is somehow best untouched by human hands, which is exactly the opposite of the truth. God placed Adam and Eve into the Garden of Eden to cultivate and guard it. That means that it was not already in optimal condition, and it was in danger of becoming corrupted without human protection and human cultivation. Those are the things that we should do. And so at the Cornwall Alliance, we describe godly dominion over the earth as men and women made in God's image, working lovingly together to enhance the fruitfulness, the beauty, and the safety of the earth to the glory of God and the benefit of our neighbors.
Dr. Cal Beisner is founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation and author of the book, Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. You can find out more about the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Cal, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Todd. God bless you.
On the other side of the break, Robert Spencer is going to join us. We're going to talk about a headline in the Washington Post, Islamic State's caliphate has been toppled in Iraq and Syria. Why isn't anyone celebrating? Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch with us right after this.
Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or your church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at OutdoorNativityStore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities, OutdoorNativityStore.com. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Things when I hear on the radio tonight about Obama being a Christian but not being good because of his pro-choice and homosexuality stances.
Here's a recent comment from the Issues Etc. comment line.
Yet I see no evidence of any literature that in the Bible that you stated that says that these things are against biblical teachings.
The Issues Etc. comment line, available 24/7, 618-223-8382.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.